It's Jeremy White and Joe DiBiase.
We should do the show outside. We need to get some sort of veranda built or some sort of...
A balcony?
Yeah, so we could just sit outside. You know, someplace quiet, a park.
Give me some birds chirping in the background, some good show sound.
Which birds? Yeah. How many bird calls do you know?
Oh, no, I'm going to be bad at this.
None.
Okay. A seagull.
Ah!
I could definitely spot a seagull.
All right, what an answer. You know,
like the easy ones. A crow, maybe.
Ah!
Okay. That's easy.
We've established that you know those calls.
Yeah. The big birds.
You're listening to on the home of the Bills. WGR Sports Radio 550.
Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Happy Friday.
Is there a reason you thought Taylor Swift went to Nebraska versus Cincinnati last night?
I saw someone tweet that she deserves a better first game to celebrate the engagement, and I wasn't sure if that meant that she and Travis went to Nebraska-Cincinnati, Joe and I talking before the break, or if she just watched Nebraska-Cincinnati.
I apologize for even questioning. She was there.
Okay.
Her and Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes were all at Nebraska-Cincinnati last night.
So she's at Nebraska-Cincinnati.
Okay.
Mean, she's a new football fan. That's something we've learned. And she jumped on the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, with good reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, then she went to watch, was that her first college football game? And it's the Cincinnati Bearcats and Nebraska Cornhuskers. And
maybe.
Cincinnati lost.
Which, now that I'm thinking about it, does make a little bit of sense because Travis Kelce went to Cincinnati.
Yes, right.
Right, that's the obvious. They didn't just decide, hey, want to go to Nebraska, Cincinnati tonight if they had no ties to either program.
It's like when I was dating my wife, probably before we were married, we went to a Syracuse basketball game. You know, like something to do.
Unless what I thought happened is, because I saw Mahomes was at the game, and I just assumed that he went to support his lookalike, Dylan Raiola.
That's right,
the quarterback for Nebraska,
who leans into the lookalike status.
Oh yeah, everything
and dresses like him.
Dresses like him. Wears the same number. Has the same hair. Yeah. He like copies his mannerisms and the way he walks and just everything. Yeah,
which is pretty weird.
Yeah, it's pretty strange behavior, I think. Although it might get him. I don't know. It'll get him more attention and it'll get him drafted. I don't know.
It might.
So.
Will any draft analyst be able to say, you know, he really kind of reminds me of Mahomes? Well, yeah, he's trying to.
Oh, man.
He might as well wear a costume.
Collinsworth cannot wait for that guy to appear in Sunday Night Football. Like, you know who this guy reminds me of? Yeah, that's coming.
Dylan Raiola is his name. All right.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, Jeremy and Joe. It's a Friday. It's our last Friday that's not a football Friday. Right? I mean, next week we're talking Cowboys-Eagles at this time, and we're also getting ready for Chiefs-Chargers in Brazil, which will be free on YouTube for everybody. And that's a big game. We'll be watching that one to see if the Chiefs can get, punched in the face by the Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's happening. And in the meantime, we've got a Micah Parsons trade. So if you want to join us, 803-0550. The Parsons trade, before this happened, I was talking with Jerry Ostrowski and Joe Marino, and I said, if Parsons were to get traded, it would be the biggest trade since blank. What NFL trade comes close to this? People will say Khalil Mack. It's not the same. Khalil Mack, you kind of can't justify it just based on the return, because the return is not enough. And right. Khalil Mack had fewer years of his prime left. He was still very good, but he was not Parsons.
No, Parsons also played, not that this should matter all the way, but he plays for the Cowboys. And I think his profile, just him being on the Cowboys making this trade, I do think raises its profile a little bit. Why do people still know what the Herschel Walker trade is?
That's right.
It's not just that it was Herschel Walker and all the stuff that came with it. It was that the Cowboys made that trade.
Also, correction, Khalil Mack might have been right in the same prime neighborhood.
Age-wise, they were probably similar.
Yeah,
right?
When he went to the Bears, he was 27.
Yeah. So, you know, that part of it is similar, but I think this is bigger than the Khalil Mack trade, so it's got to be something before that.
Okay.
And you're going to what? Like, I'm thinking of quarterback trades, maybe? Like, could it have been Russell Wilson getting traded? No, right?
And that's pretty big.
When it happened at the time, it didn't really work out. Russell Wilson, maybe?
Yeah, a Super Bowl winning quarterback gets traded.
for multiple first-round picks.
Yeah.
From his, I mean, the team that he won it with, he was still relatively good, and he wasn't like 37 years old. It's not like when Rodgers gets traded. So, you know, that one might be defendable for that. Otherwise, am I going back to like, I'm not going back to the Herschel Walker trade, am I?
It feels like it's close, but probably not.
Or the Marshall, not the Marshall Faulk trade, the Eric Dickerson trade before that even. Just, I'm going to be thinking of ones in the late 80s and early 90s, I think.
Tyreek Hill trade was pretty big. Again, he's got fewer years of his prime at the time, I think. I guess I should check all these. It's just a monster. It's a monster trade. And Jerry Jones, you know, today if you're a Cowboys fan, if you would, not that we talk to too many Cowboys fans,
mm-hmm.
it would be close to a disown my team moment for me.
Tyreek, by the way, was 28 when he got traded.
Okay, so, you know.
But 28 at wide receiver, you already got 5 years left at best, whereas Parsons might have 10.
Right, that's probably right. I would consider disowning my team, because until the owner was gone, and that, of course, has no end in sight. There's no reason to. His press conference yesterday after trading Parsons, I saw he was asked a question. Somebody timed it. He was asked a question and answered the first question for 11 minutes. He just talked.
Come on.
He just talked.
It wasn't that. I only took his press conference in clips. I actually want to go back and watch the
whole
thing.
He just kept rambling.
11 minutes.
And rambling and rambling. Uh-huh. And
he called him Michael a few times,
yeah,
I think.
He called
that.
Him Michael. He said, we got to stop the run. He said, this is in the best interest of our franchise this year.
Uh-huh.
He said that this is something that makes them better in the now. If they were going to do this and they really thought this was in the best interest of their football team, they should have done it pre-draft. They'd have gotten a lot more.
Yeah.
They should have done it pre-free agency.
They would have had more teams that could have been involved.
That's right. If Parsons was actually available, think about the Myles Garrett sweepstakes that never came to pass. Like,
right.
If instead that's Micah Parsons in February, then the Bills are in it. Everybody's in it.
Right.
They're making cap space. They're thinking, okay, I got $21 million, $25 million right now in cap space. I'll make the trade and give them the extension and see what I can get. They would have got a lot more. Mm-hmm. Instead, they're negotiating with how many teams? Three? Two? The comparisons to the Luka Doncic trade are kind of good. Like, oh, you got a good player in return.
Yeah.
And you got picks.
Right.
But what? A generational talent kind of player? A top-tier player in the NFL? You just, in the middle of a...
That there's no reason to believe is going to be worse anytime soon.
No, and you're not bad enough to think you're going to tear it down. Like, you've got a lot of talent. You've got... Dak Prescott, I mean, he's pretty good. Your coach might be a joke, but Parsons actually gets traded. It's nuts. It's a wild thing. Right before the season.
Yeah.
And I saw some also suggesting, like, what are the Cowboys, what are the players thinking? It's a game week of prep. They are in a game week. They play a week from yesterday. Like, oh, our best players got traded.
And the first thing I thought of was Dak, who was signed a contract extension last year, sitting there at 32 years old, probably thinking, what did I sign up for here?
Yeah.
What are we doing? I've got CeeDee Lamb and what else right now to work with? The coach is a joke, and the defense now is probably going to be a joke. Who's their third best player today? Go ahead and name their third best player.
Kevontae Turpin. No, he left.
The returner.
No, he's not there.
Him.
It's not him.
Like, they don't have, it feels like, anything.
It might be the guy they got back from Green Bay. Kenny Clark.
It might be.
Three-time Pro Bowler.
I saw a few people going like, oh, I wonder if they're targeting Arch Manning. You know, maybe that's what this is. And I'm thinking, there's no chance they're losing 15 games if Prescott's their quarterback.
No.
Like, their quarterback's too good. So... That can't be your plan, and he's at an age where you should be trying to go all in. What are you trading a premier Hall of Fame pass rusher for? When those picks are good, if you even hit on them, by the way, Green Bay is going to be good. Maybe they're not picking 30th, but they should be picking in the 20s, at least.
They might win the Super Bowl.
Maybe they win the Super Bowl.
The thing they needed more than anything was this.
Yeah. So those are going to be late first-round picks. Like, okay, congratulations, you hit on those picks. By the time they're good, Dak Prescott's 35 years old.
Hmm.
What are you doing? That's why maybe I am wondering if they're thinking about the next phase, the next era. But if you are, what did you just sign Dak Prescott for? And I think it all just leads back to they have an 82-year-old man running their franchise.
Not just an
that is a lot of information.
Not just an 82-year-old man, but at the risk of saying something like I'm going to say, which is like he's someone that has had success in his life, so he thinks that anything he does will work out for him.
Right.
Right? Hubris is what it is.
But he hasn't won, like...
Oh, I know. But he thinks...
He hasn't totally.
He thinks he just knows better. He thinks he's right. Playing 3D chess. And it's quite clear the Cowboys as an organization are... And they are such a minor league... really are a minor league franchise with a major league reputation.
Yeah.
They're in the same division as the Eagles. And some of the things that Jerry Jones said yesterday are complete red flags. You know, like, well, it takes a lot of guys. You can't have everybody. I know, like, a lot of GMs talk like that. They talk like that when they've lost a trade, or they talk like that when they want that answer to protect them from the truth. You know, I was talking at training camp with Mike Catalano from Rochester, Buffalo Plus YouTube channel and WHM in Rochester. And, you know, the cap is real, the cap isn't real stuff. I liked it how he said it, which is no team has ever lost a player they really wanted to keep because of the cap. And that's true.
Mm-hmm.
No team has ever lost a player they really wanted to keep. If a player left, they'll say, we just couldn't. We'd love to have him, but we just couldn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. You didn't actually really want to keep that player. Nobody gets into cap prison, cap jail the way that these teams suggest that they do. They sometimes get a little tight and then say, well, all right, let's make some harder decisions. But when you're good... The cap, you just keep pushing it down the road. It keeps growing. You have endless opportunities to move money around.
Mm-hmm.
And to say, like, Micah Parsons, well, you got to, it takes a team. Okay. Sure, man. A lot of cap, here's what the quote was that set me off. A lot of capital is required to build a team. It takes more than one. You have to allocate your resources, whether it be draft picks or whether it be finances. That team plays in the same division as the Eagles.
Yeah.
You just can't be farther away.
They couldn't.
The Eagles have $182 million sunk into 2030
and
payroll. Why? Because they're like, oh, we have to pay everybody. Instead of you can't pay everybody, it's we'll pay everybody, and we'll figure it out in 5 years. And that, man, the Cowboys, what a mess. Good for Micah Parsons. He won. The season of the hold-in, every player won. They all won. Nobody was hardlined. Parsons, I guess, was hardlined because the report is that Jerry Jones told him play on the fifth-year option or leave.
Yeah.
And he said, okay. And then he got his trade and his contract extension.
And a big one.
So that's Parsons, Hendrickson, McLaurin, Cook, the four big hold-ins. They all either got paid. They all got paid. They all got paid.
But one got traded.
One got moved.
I guess I can't even really take much of a victory lap, though, of thinking, like, I've been saying I just want one of these guys to get traded just so that I could believe that one of these trade requests is actually real.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the time it's, hey, this person requested a trade, and we all just go, yeah, but it's just a negotiating
tactic. That's how it happens. Yeah, that's the next step.
The guy never gets dealt. Finally, a guy got dealt, but maybe I need Jerry Jones to be the owner and the general manager to have that actually come to fruition. And I don't know how many of those there are in the league. There might be two guys like that in the league. I saw a good comparison to how the Cowboys run their business and how they pay players and contract stuff to what the Bengals do, which is constantly criticized. They really are the Bengals with a better PR agent, right? And a lesser quarterback. That's basically what they are. And we hammer the Bengals constantly. The whole league does for how they do it. So I think the Cowboys have to start being treated the same way. And what is, like you said, it's like a minor league team. They act like a small market team. Who trades Micah Parsons? Teams like the Jaguars make that trade and send him away. You're supposed to be Dallas. I'm glad for it, right? Like, it's hilarious watching the NFC East fans take a victory lap because he's running the team, and he'll keep doing that. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know what the possible defense was for trading a player at that age. He wants $47 million. You pay him $47 million
mm-hmm.
at the end of the day. Or you keep going. If it's, oh, we think he's worth 42, we're willing to make you higher paid than T.J. Watt and Myles Garrett, but we're not going $6 million higher than those guys. I mean, I was a little surprised to see the number. I thought it'd be 40, like, right in line with Watt and Garrett, and it was higher than Watt and Garrett. But You don't trade him. That's the thing you definitely don't do if you have him. You do not trade him. You go into the season with this situation before you trade him, and that's kind of what it sounds like they were afraid of, having this linger into the regular season. And I would say you're punting on 10 years of a Hall of Fame pass rusher because you're afraid of what it might do to you in week one against the Eagles.
Right.
I think they're a joke. I think they're a total joke of a franchise.
So the obvious question is, did the Bills miss out? Do you feel like they missed out? Do you feel like the only thing you really could say, because the Bills could not make this trade with the salary cap. They would have had to move heaven and earth. The compensation, the contract, and two firsts and a three-time Pro Bowler. They don't really have that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to say it's Ed Oliver and two first-round picks?
Sure.
I mean, I'd make that trade. I would not blink. I'd make that trade for Micah Parsons.
Yep, me too.
And give him the contract. I would do that. But the Bills couldn't do that because of the cap. So if you are sitting here this morning waking up saying this is too bad that the Bills couldn't make this move and be the team to get this over the finish line, you have to, in kind of go back in time and say, well, and if you want to say this is all hindsight, you can do that. Well, if they hadn't signed Bosa and if they hadn't signed Josh Palmer, those two, like that would have done it. Although that's not even it. Those two don't take up cap space of $21 million. They take up like an AAV of $21
million. Mm-hmm.
So you need even more. All right, if they don't sign Palmer and Bosa and Cook and
Shakir?
Curtis Samuel.
You want to go far enough
back in time to say if they hadn't extended, you know, you have to find
Dawson Knox.
Dawson Knox. Now I'm back. Should I have known 3-4 years ago I needed cap space? And there's a point to be made about that. This is kind of getting way in the weeds of the cap and foresight. And I'm not necessarily saying I believe this, but if you wanted to make this point, you'd say what Bean should do is operate with some buffer zone.
Mm-hmm.
Stay 12 below the cap in case something like this happens. So it's not that hard to snag the big fish when he's available.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the counter to that is, well, how often does that happen? Should I just...
Right, it's rare.
Should I play $20 million under the cap because I'm waiting for the next Brandon Ayuk, who never got traded, or Garrett, or Hendrickson? His was like a $17 million hit, or yeah. McLaurin, I think, was 19, or Parsons was 21. Should I just operate my franchise below the cap and really take away from what I can do on the field to leave room in case this happens? I think you could make the case. I think it's a tough case to make. There are teams out there that have space, and some of the reason they have space is because they're in a different timeline. The Packers have, of course, signed their quarterback to big money. One thing that's different between the Bills and the Packers that I like to point out, which I'm not connecting these two things, but remember last year and 2 years ago, the Packers model at receiver, I was talking about how, wow, look at the Packers model at receiver.
Yeah.
And the model was they just drafted like six of them in a two-year span. Eventually, they will get paid. Eventually, everybody gets paid. If you're good, you get paid. So the Packers are kind of here in a window where they drafted young and they don't have a ton of big contracts, so they have the room to do something like this.
Right.
So if you want the Bills to be that, there's a way to be that. I don't know if it's really being honest to say, I would have called that differently the whole way. Would you love to have Micah Parsons? Yes. But it means a series of decisions based on where they are, fewer extensions, decide we're not going to extend middle tier guys that we think are really pretty good. We're going to have more of a model of you only get paid if you're elite. Which is kind of the Niners. The Niners do that. The Niners pay the top-tier guys, and they go out and spend a bunch of draft picks. That's the Rams, too. There are some teams that kind of do that. Think of your own fantasy approach, Joe. You're in an auction draft. What do you want to do? Buy 10 $20 players or two $70 players and guys after that? You know, there's two approaches. 803-0550.
And it really isn't that similar, Green Bay and the Bills, like where they are in their timelines, other than, like, to me, the only thing you cannot say or like the worst defense you could make for why the Bills couldn't do this is, well, you're paying Josh Allen, so you could never have a player like this.
Yeah, that's not defendable because a lot of teams are paying a player like a Josh Allen, and Josh even took a discount.
Jordan Love makes the exact $55 million per year. Josh Allen makes $55 million per year.
There you go.
They make the exact same per year, the Green Bay quarterback and the Buffalo quarterback. The biggest difference is that Green Bay, they're a little earlier in their timeline, right? So they don't have all these extensions, these middle-tier extensions yet, kind of like where the Bills were when they traded for Von Miller. They had paid Josh.
Or signed Von, yeah.
Signed Von Miller. When they signed Von, they had signed Josh, but they hadn't paid James Cook or Terrell Bernard or Christian Benford or Greg Rousseau or all the guys, Dawson Knox even maybe. Maybe they had paid Knox. He'd be the one that they did.
Yeah, they paid him fast.
Like, they didn't have all these contracts on their books, and that's kind of what Green Bay looks like right now. So it is – we don't know what they'll do when they get to that next stage. I guess they have Parsons now, so you kind of know. Like, they're saying, yeah, we're okay walking away from – you know, if Jaden Reed is worth $30 million in 2 years, like, we might be okay walking away from that. Or if we have a guard that's worth $12 million per year, who's really good. He's not like the best, but he's really good. Yeah, we're okay in 2 years with him walking away because we went out and got Micah Parsons. And if I could pick between the two, that's the one I would rather have. No doubt. Especially, the Bills get credit for this all the time. Who's better at pulling guys off the street or undrafted late-round pick guys and developing them into roles that you can trust on the team? How many Bills are around the roster on that? You got to be good at that when you're going to go this strategy. If you're going to go top-end, elite talent, and we're going to spend $47 million on one guy, that'll work for you if you are good at, I'm going to fill this spot for $1 million and this spot for $2 million and this spot for $1.5 million, and I'm going to get away with it. And wouldn't everybody believe the Bills would be good at that in comparison to a lot of teams? That's their reputation. But you would have had to do this before. You would have had to it's almost frustrating they have so many guys that are right in this middle tier. That's why I didn't want them to pay Cook. I wanted them to draw the line at some point. One too many. And they have not drawn that line yet. They might never draw that line. They might say, guys that are just pretty good, we'll sign them for as long as they keep coming through our doors.
Well, this is the genesis of the fight about receiver with Bean. It's not even about, like, which it's always characterized, they need a number one. It's, no, instead of spending 11 on Josh Palmer, just draft a guy and let that possibly grow into something. And maybe that's a way to save on the cap. But whatever, if they had done that, then they signed a defensive end for $11 million like a Bosa. Whatever, the Bills are in good shape. It's unfortunate they kind of couldn't get this guy. The good news is the Ravens didn't. The Chiefs didn't.
This is true.
The Bengals didn't.
No
the
one
Patriots
mean, yeah.
didn't. You know, you might lose
Denver.
You might lose to the Packers in the Super Bowl, which I don't know if we'd all take that right now. You might take that right now. 803-0550. Give us your thoughts on it. It feels like it's a good day to kind of talk about their build and this kind of thing. Will Bean ever be the kind of guy that goes in on Ed Oliver and two firsts for a guy? I mean, it's rare. So, I mean, it's not to say he wouldn't. I don't think he's afraid to. If he had the space, I think he might. But that space is, it's a bigger conversation. Like you're laying out, Joe. It really is. Like, do you like the way the Bills do it? Or should they do it more like, I don't know, Dallas? No.
They should not do that.
Not like Dallas.
They definitely
what does Dallas
do?
Dallas waits too long and pays. And the Bills get out ahead of it, right? The Bills are a top-class franchise, top well-run franchise that gets things right a lot. So I anticipate we'll get some calls today about Parsons, but you know the context, you got to keep it real about what they could and couldn't do. And if you want to go back in time or whatever, if you were saying it at the time, there's ways, there's avenues they could have been in the mix, but they were not really in the mix this time. 803-0550, Jeremy and Joe, give us a ring on the big, huge Parsons trade and what the fallout means. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
You can report all you want. There's no way they're allowing Michael Parsons to go anywhere. All of this is part of the negotiations. Michael Parsons, I want him to take control of this thing and say, I don't care about you two and whatever y'all got going. Get your butts in a room and get my money on that paper. That's what you need to be doing. So I'm hoping that's what gets done. But I guarantee Michael Parsons not going anywhere. Jerry's not that crazy. This is all what we call just negotiation stuff.
Nothing ever is an own. It's all just a negotiation, huh? Relevant.
That was 7 minutes before he got traded.
He got traded 7 minutes after that. Michael Irvin. Not an insider with the Cowboys. And he also just called Jerry Jones crazy. He's not that crazy. Well, he did it. All right. He's crazy.
So now he's crazy.
Micah Parsons to the Packers. I saw John Ledyard, NFL draft analyst, make the point before Parsons got traded. And his point was, because it really picked up. Adam Schefter, he reported the Cowboys are willing to listen.
Yes.
Oh, all right.
I did not believe it for a second when I saw that.
And then I saw maybe Jeremy Fowler say league circles are talking about the teams that make sense. Packers, Cardinals, Ravens were the three names I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And now Parsons gets dealt to the Packers. But anyway, John Ledyard, what he said was NFC teams especially should think about this really hard and really hard, like long and hard about doing this because, he clarified, in the NFC, the parity at the top of the quarterback market, it's Goff, Jordan Love, who's the next best quarterback in the NFC, Jaden Daniels. Like, it's not as good,
not a lot of them,
at the top of the NFC, at least not thought of right now, as it is in the AFC where the top four guys are the top four guys in sport.
Right.
So John Ledyard's take was NFC teams should do this because it could legitimately swing the balance of the conference by getting this one deal done. You know, you're the Packers. You're trying to get over J.J. McCarthy and the Vikings. You're trying to get over
the Lions. Your own division is scary. Yeah.
It's scary. But he said teams like the Packers. And here it is. The Packers get Micah Parsons for two firsts and a three-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle. Now the Cowboys can stop the run. Stat of the day. You ready for a stat of the day?
Yes.
Let's get you a stat of the day on Micah Parsons. There's a number of these. But Bill Barnwell had this. Bill Barnwell from ESPN. Bill Barnwell, over the last 4 years, the Cowboys are the league's best defense with Micah Parsons on the field with EPA per play. Best defense in the league.
Amazing.
1,039 plays without him. They are the second worst defense when he's not on the field.
And now he's leaving the field for every play. Yeah.
That's how big of a difference he makes for EPA per play.
Yeah.
Now, EPA per play, as we kind of know, like that. I was listening to somebody talk about the one flaw in EPA per play, and it's even a flaw, it really, really keys in on negative plays. So negative plays really sink your score. And what are sacks? Hugely negative plays, which is, again, what his job is. Anyway. Are there fantasy implications here, Joe? The Cowboys now have a Bengals-caliber defense, and you should be scooping up as many Cowboys as possible?
They already, I thought, were some version of that, and now I guess they are totally that.
Yeah.
Prescott, especially, he's going as, like, the 11th quarterback off the board. Like, because CeeDee Lamb is not going to move much, right? He's already going as one of, like, the five top guys. You could take him over Justin Jefferson now, though, and feel pretty comfortable about it. Yeah. I actually did that in the league last week where I took him over Jefferson. But, like, if you are, I don't want one of the elite quarterbacks in fantasy, I'd like to wait a little bit. Like, go get Prescott in those middle rounds. I have an MVP bet on him for this reason. Like, he's going to be Burrow, right? Those two are going to be slugging it out to lead the league in passing would be my bet.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us. Get some calls in. Your thoughts on the Parsons trade? You know, we're not, well, whatever. We'll let you handle it and do what you think is right. Mike in Tonawanda leads us off. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Honestly, I don't believe Bean has it in him to make this kind of trade. I think he's content on building this team with B-minus and C-plus players, you know. But he should reconsider it because the last time he traded a first-rounder, he got Diggs. And we saw how well that did, you know, to the end, of course, whatever like that. But good things do happen. Even the big swing of Von Miller, that was working out. People figured that was working out until he got hurt. He just happened to get hurt, you know. But that was going great, too. So, I mean, I think in order to, like, get one of these elite players, either two things, one or two things happen. We got to bottom out 1 year, pick top 15 in the draft, or we got to just give up some assets to get one. You know, that means one of two ways, and that's the way it's going to happen. So, but I think he's content on, like, just paying these middling guys. Because, like you were saying earlier, okay, I mean, you can do a revisionist history and believe, all right, if he didn't give this person this money or this or that, whatever. But, I mean, that's kind of true. And he gave all the money to these middling guys, you know. And, like, and I asked a question a couple weeks ago, where's all the money? You know, because other than Josh, where's all the money tied to? Now, slaying the Eagles, we went back and forth with the Eagles thing or whatever. But, like, I mean, he's basically giving it to a lot of, you know, and I'm not mean to crap all over a lot of the guys, but they're not elite players.
Well, thanks, Mike. I do think there's room here for that kind of big picture conversation about them. And that was a little bit of the theme of the offseason this year, was it not? That we thought, all right, you know what you got to do? You got to, maybe not Bean's theme, but our theme. You out there, me in here, you, Joe, more blue chip players is the goal.
Yeah, go get the whale is something I think we said a lot.
And maybe they've found one or two in the draft, or, you know, some of the signings are perfect fits, whether that's Bosa, you buy low and he hits, or if it's Michael Hoyt, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or Josh Palmer, turns into a star as he gets unlocked. The way I said it was, I want more top 100 NFL players. I want somebody the league thinks is irreplaceable. So we'll see if they found any of those. Because the NFL top 100, it's Allen, Dawkins, and Cook. And that's going to be it. And Cook getting on there is kind of new. Benford not listed. Benford is one of the top 100 players. Like, he should be, but he's not on that list. I think this is a fair point to make. And while the Bills building their roster is not fantasy football, it's just a representation to me, a comparison in fantasy. You're going to an auction draft. I said it in the first segment. You want to just get 10 players for $20 each, or 5 players for $40, and then street free agents, or the biggest whale out there. What's going to win? There are a lot of different ways to do it. And I was looking at the Packers cap versus the Bills cap. Like, how many players do they have with an AAV over $10 million? And the Packers and the Bills are kind of close. Allen, Dawkins, Knox, Milano, Oliver. That's your list. Not exactly the greatest list. I mean,
yeah.
Knox and Allen and Dawkins. But past that, like, Milano will be gone after this year, probably. Oliver is there.
Probably, yeah.
And for the Packers, it's not that different. The list is not that different. The same number of players near the top of their cap. It's Jordan Love. Mm-hmm. It's Rashawn Gary. Micah Parsons now, although his cap hit will probably come down.
Well, I mean, the question as to whether Bean still has that deal in him.
I think he does.
I think there will be eventually, I don't know when, a test of that. And I don't know that he really got tested on that this summer, other than if you thought he was going to go pay Milton Williams or Josh Sweat a giant sum of money. The test would be, for example, when Trey Hendrickson hits free agency in a year. And cap goes up.
That's different, though.
Why is that different?
Because Mike's talking about the guts to make a trade, not just sign a guy.
But that, even beyond that, like, sure, like, that makes it a little bit different. But when the cap goes up and the Bills will have more space and they'll do their restructures and they'll cut a guy, like, maybe they'll cut Curtis Samuel, they'll have room to do things next summer. And what are they going to want to do? Are they going to want to go pay Trey Hendrickson $40 million or $38 million a year and then go replace Matt Milano with a rookie and replace Connor McGovern with a $2 million center, or just plug in Cedric Van Pran Granger? You want to go discount bin or bargain bin shopping for linebacker and center because we're going and getting Trey Hendrickson? Or will they say, no, we don't want Trey Hendrickson because we want to sign Connor McGovern to $11 million a year, and we want to go replace Matt Milano with a $9 million linebacker, and we want to go fill in a guard with $6 million? Like, what do they prefer?
Yeah.
Because, well, for me, that's an easy one. I go get Trey Hendrickson, I'll start a rookie somewhere, and that'll be an issue going into a season, but whatever. I've got Trey Hendrickson, and I'm going to plug a $2 million veteran over here that might be a little past his prime, but I'm getting Trey Hendrickson. And their actions of late have pointed more towards, now they might rather have a guy at every position have it solidified everywhere, and pay a little bit to have that be the case. Hendrickson's the only guy, by the way, that would really test that this summer, unless someone's going to get traded.
This is where
next summer.
The as you laid that all out, doesn't that sound like the conversation we've had 100 times about, would you rather pay a $30 million receiver and some guys, or have three that make 10 and some guys? There are schools of thought for both. But Parsons is a $47 million AAV. And I already saw, oh man, that's too much. You can't. He's not that good. I am of the belief that he is that good.
Is that only being said because it's a $6 million gap from Garrett and Watt?
Maybe. But the point is, I kind of find it, I'm not of the school of thought of kind of what you laid out where, oh, don't pay the big guy, rather pay a bunch of middle guys. Because paying the top guy, you can just draft players and maybe find them. And, you know, like the idea of, well, maybe you'll find some value in the fourth, fifth, and sixth round. And if you don't, you know what you do? You move on from them very easy. You're never going to be in cap jail moving on from your fifth rounders that didn't hit. I think there might be a good plan there to have a ton of fourths and fifths and sixths, pay big guys, and then draft a million guys in the middle rounds, and whoever doesn't hit is so easy to just cut loose.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas middle-tier free agents, that gets tougher. All of a sudden, you're paying money that is dead money. Not really a specific Bills point, but I've mentioned a few times that the Niners and the Rams tend to be a little bit more of this route.
I just think we also live in this world where we feel like the Bills need to have every single starting position solidified. And that isn't always the case around the league. In fact, is it not rare that is the case? That you have a pretty good guy at pretty much every position. Like, Green Bay, they trade for Micah Parsons. I'm sure they got spots where they're going into the season like, we have no idea what this is going to look like. Whether that's a safety for them or whether that's, I mean, that could be receiver for them this year, right? They've got an injury to Jaden Reed and a rookie in Matthew Golden. First round pick. You'd like that to go well, but you don't know. I mean, they have questions around the roster. So do most teams not named the Eagles.
Right.
But to me, like, you should be willing to accept as a football team. Not that the Bills necessarily should have done this summer, because I don't know that they ever got the opportunity to go get a guy like this. But in the future, I'd rather have them be open to, yeah, two or three positions were really uncertain, but it's okay because the trade-off is we got an elite player somewhere else.
803-0550. Jump in the chat, throw a like, give us a subscribe. If you're watching, talking to you, do it. Click the like button, click subscribe. Jeremy and Joe, Josh here, G here, and for Owen as well. And we're talking about the Micah Parsons trade, how it hits you. How does it hit you? And do you relate it to the Bills? At least he's not in the AFC. That's the good news. I feel like we'd have a lot more calls today if he went to Baltimore. People would be more upset, possibly. 803-0550 on WGR. Jeremy and Joe, big college football weekend ahead. Less than a week from the NFL season, and Micah Parsons traded to the Packers. Give us a ring, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550.
There's a new matchup in our hat bracket up at WGR550 on Twitter. You can vote in that, too. Sal's got a penguin hat up. Owen has a hat of the oak tree at Delaware on 18.
Yep.
I didn't know
that. Yes, he does. All right, we're going to get a break in. Micah Parsons, we got to talk about those uniforms, too. We haven't talked about that on the show yet.
Yes.
The Bills' rivalry uniforms are out. We have some information on those. It's all coming up here on WGR.